Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Today on the show, we have Ben Werman. We talk about geoengineering. We kick it off with a bang. We talk about diet and how he was led to the carnivore diet through the Bitcoin rabbit hole. It's a fun discussion, very interesting, a lot of practical takeaways too, and some that I'm going to be implementing here in this new year. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Ben, thank you for being here today, man. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Excited to be here, Michael. I really appreciate you having me on. This is one of the podcasts I dug deep into back this summer when I was trying to get caught up on all my Bitcoin podcasts. It had been a while at that point. I was diving into all sorts of other rabbit holes, which I'm sure you've seen, and just awesome work you're doing here, man. Love the content, love the Bitcoin talk, and love the guests. You're doing great work with this.
Appreciate it. Really do. So let's jump right into, we're going to get to Bitcoin. We're going to get to diet. We're going to talk about all these things, but I want to start with something controversial, geoengineering. So I've seen you've been retweeting and sharing a lot more on these chemtrails, not contrails, the chemtrails that we seem to be appearing across the sky in many places. I know one of our team members, I think, was sort of a victim of some of this in these operations in Dubai. Maybe over the summer. So, could you explain? Well, maybe just start with like, what is it that is happening? Best you understand it, and then what you believe is going on. Like, why is this happening?
Yeah, and you know, like you just mentioned, one of your team members was in Dubai when they did the probably cloud seeding operations, I'm assuming. There's so many of these examples that are completely publicly known. Like another example is in China before the last Olympics there, they were literally had cannons set up, just shooting silver iodide just into the sky, just blasting it to dump all the rain before the Olympics so it wouldn't rain. And so like this is why we sort of use the geoengineering term. I use that more than chemtrails because, well, first of all, because like the indoctrination of the word chemtrails just turn people's brains off is insane. Like whenever people hear that word, they just immediately think, oh, crazy person, they're wrong about everything, they're insane, because that's what we all think when we hear that, you know. And it really wakes you up to just how much confidence people build up, including myself, like most of us, when you know we are just now sort of waking up in the last couple of years, or sometimes maybe people a decade. It's like we have so much confidence that this thing is crazy and wrong when we've never done any research on it. We just listened to the TV or, you know, done very base level headline skimming most of the time. And it's really crazy when you actually start looking into it, because this weather modification has been going on for so long. Like since like right after World War II is when we really started getting into it. That Project Cirrus was like, I believe the 50s. I'm really bad at remembering dates, but this was like back in the 50s, I believe, where they started, you know, dumping the same chemicals into hurricanes. They started flying over hurricanes and dumping chemicals into different parts of it to try to steer it and move it around. And they were successful. They figured out how to do this. They're, of course, spending tons and tons of money to figure out how to manipulate and eventually, I now believe, create these giant storm systems because the technology has improved so much. And so it's just a really crazy one to look into once you do. And I definitely credit, as you know, most of the people listening that have heard this before know, that Daniel Prince has been beating the drum on this for a while. He's really the one that got me to look into it, because I just trust the guy. You know, I've listened to his podcast a long time. I really think he does his research. So I'm like, man, if Daniel's talking about it, I should check it out. And I went down a rabbit hole and it is happening. You know, there's so many different aspects to it that it kind of does your head in after a while, because there's the planes that will be spraying different chemicals into the clouds to cause different things to happen. There are like water vapor generators on the ground. This is one of the more recent ones I looked into, how the, you know, we see these giant power plants just pumping out these giant clouds and we're all told, oh, it's water vapor, so it's fine. There's no chemicals in there, but it's not fine, because this actually messes up the hydrological cycle of planet Earth and the evaporation, the precipitation process. When humans are pumping tons of fake clouds into the sky, even if they're just water vapor, it messes that process up. It causes flooding certain places, drought certain places. And the reason why we're just seeing all of these insane weather events everywhere all at once, the floods, the droughts, the giant tornadoes and hurricanes that like go hundreds of miles up into the mountains and just happen to wipe out a very high value piece of land full of lithium, in North Carolina. Like, these things are not coincidences. And just now, as we're recording this, the UK and just most of Europe in general is just getting absolutely dumped on with this completely bizarre chemical fog. I'm not sure if you've seen this, but people are posting videos. They're looking at this fog, and they said this has been here for like 5 days straight. It smells like chemicals. It smells weird. You know, like these people who are like 40s and 50s, like, I know what fog looks like. This is not natural fog. It has a smell to it. And, you know, people have dug into the satellite data and seen then in a few days leading up to it, you can look at the cameras in the data online. I think it's zoom.earth or some website like that. I can't remember the actual one. It's in my bookmark somewhere, but you can see that in the ocean west of the UK, there are just tons of plumes coming up from the ocean, and all that, all those plumes and that giant like mystery fog is floating straight over to the UK. So it appears that there's like a fleet of ships that's pumping something into the air. It's all going over to the UK, and we still don't know what it is. So, there's just all these things going on at once, and it's truly madness. And it's a bit of a black pill, to be honest, because like it's tough to, you know, there's certain rabbit holes where you have a clear problem and a clear solution. Like Bitcoin is one of them, where, you know, the problem is central banking and fiat money, and that's causing all these issues. The solution, at least selfishly, you can fix yourself by buying Bitcoin and owning Bitcoin. And, you know, for a diet, like you talked about, if your diet sucks, you can fix your own diet. And it's still a little bit maddening, because you can see how like the pharmaceutical industry has lied to you. All these food industries have lied to you. The government guidelines, the USDA food pyramid has all lied to you. So there's a phase of, man, this really sucks. There's so much evil out there and corruption, but I can at least fix it for myself and my family who chooses to listen to me and, you know, follow along this first principles research. But for the geoengineering one, these are such massive operations. They're going on all around us. And it's like, it's easy to just get hopeless feeling like, how do we fix all this stuff? But of course, all this stuff comes from fiat money. You know, there are hundreds of millions of dollars are being funneled into it by Bill Gates and folks like him. You know, if anyone goes onto Google right now and types in Bill Gates block the sun, you know, there's tons of articles out there about him saying, yeah, I'm spending hundreds of millions of dollars to block the sun with, you know, these programs. And they use a bunch of sciencey words like stratospheric aerosol injection is their favorite scientific term. That's a fancy way of saying they're pumping heavy metals into the sky in the stratosphere through planes. And that's those giant streaks you see in the sky that just, they don't go away like contrails do. They expand into this gray white haze. And so most people can just look in the sky now. And this is why we just keep saying, just look up, look up, look up. You'll see pretty much everywhere, there's no longer the crisp, beautiful blue skies that you used to see. It's going to be some form of like white. You know, the sky is looking more white now because there's just so much haze up there from all this powdered aluminum being sprayed. So it's a tough one to swallow. But once again, Bitcoin fixes this, you know, because the fiat is what allows all this ridiculous spending on nonsense. And that's just one of the things that they get to do with it. So Bitcoin fixes this, as always, my friend.
So what is it that you think? So for anyone listening, the reason I wanted to start with this is because I know that there's a tie that the types of people who were trying to put out of business at central banks and the World Economic Forum, all those fine folks, are many of the people involved in this. And there's like a network of individuals who, you know, who obviously have a hand in many of these things. What is it, though, that you think they're trying to accomplish? Because, you know, like the example you gave about like steering a hurricane, perhaps potentially away from a lot of people or something to that effect. I'm not defending it because they're still dumping, you know, chemicals into the air. And I think playing God is probably a bad idea. But I think someone could probably in their minds make a case for why this could be beneficial in certain circumstances. I would never assume that with the types of people who we're talking about here. What do you think they are trying to do? What's the end objective? Is it like, oh, well, climate change, and so we're trying to blot out the sun? Is it more nefarious and we just want to kill a bunch of people, you know, by putting heavy metals that are going to fall and they're going to breathe in? And, or, or is it for, you know, legitimate weather modification purposes, even if still, you know, maybe an ill-advised venture? What do you think is like the objective to all of this?
That's a really good question, and definitely the most common question people still ask, and I was asking for a long time. The short answer is it's complicated. There are a lot of different incentives flying around out there that are badly aligned. As Bitcoiners, we love to look at the incentives of things, and there are a lot of different powerful groups, all powered by fiat, that are incentivized to keep this going. And so, first of all, you know, like I said earlier, there's the Bill Gates and the climate lunatics that want to, you know, block the sun to save us from global warming. This is their thing. Like, they think that the sun is going to kill us all. So we need to fill the stratosphere with heavy metal aerosols to reflect the sun away from the Earth and shoot it back out into space. This is literally what they're doing. And this is, I mean, this is pure fiat insanity, you know, and there's lots of these fancy scientists everywhere in the fiat academia as well. David Keith from Harvard, Ken Caldera from Stanford, I believe. These scientists that are just making this their whole life's work. It's like, we have to save us from global warming, so we need to block the sun. So they're all in this together. There's a big group. Another possible perpetrator here is the chemical companies like Monsanto, Bayer, and these types who want to turn everything into GMOs, and they don't want any natural food anymore. So it benefits them to wipe out all the natural farms and the food cycle and all plant life. Because when plants get filled with aluminum, they cannot uptake nutrients anymore. And this is why a lot of people may be noticing the trees all around us are starting to look a little less lively. Like, you know, I'm here in the Northwest, like we were talking about before recording. There's tons of forest nearby. I walk around and you can just tell there's more trees that are falling down than standing up sometimes when you go to certain places. And there's less butterflies around. There's less birds singing. My backyard garden that my mom has built beautifully here used to be just like filled with birds and bees and butterflies and squirrels and raccoons and everything. And now there's like a couple of birds and some crows, you know? So people will notice, in also just dead bees everywhere. If people are in places with gardens, lots of gardens and plants where bees usually hang out, you'll notice, like, start watching the ground, you know, and you'll see dead bees all over the place because they're filled with aluminum. And there have been lots of tests on this. When they look at the bees, like, what's wrong with these bees? They're full of aluminum. So if you Google that as well, that you can also look at the studies they've done. This is why they're dying off. It's aluminum poisoning. And people are also taking this into their own hands, just testing their own water. I really recommend people to go do this. If you have a lake nearby or snow near your house, a test you can do is just get it tested for metals, see what's in there. And time after time, people are commenting on my content saying, dude, I tested my water and it is off the charts full of aluminum. This is crazy. And it's happening everywhere. It's global at this point. So yeah, do your own research. Highly recommend checking that. Anyway, where was I? Chemical companies want everything to be GMOs. So they already have patents on aluminum-resistant GMO seeds. They've created this already. So they want to push this through. They want to get rid of all the natural organic farms and wipe them out. And so it helps them to be spraying all these chemicals everywhere that destroys everything. So they can insert the solution to the problem, you know, create the problem and sell the solution like these fiat industries do. And so they have their aluminum seeds, or aluminum resistant seeds rather, ready to sell to all these farmers and make every single farm these Franken crops that are made by them. Then there's Wall Street, which is like trading these commodities. So, and this is there's a really good movie out there. I put in my Nostra post talking about this called Why in the World Are They Spraying? It's by Michael Murphy. And really good. It goes really deep into this topic of like, why would anyone do this completely insane thing of spraying chemicals in the sky? That's a good movie because it really goes deep into all these different facets of why they're doing it. But Wall Street traders can trade based on information they have. When they have special information, they can, you know, they know what to go long on, what to go short on. So it's a relatively small investment for them to shoot some money over to these industries that, you know, shoot chemicals over the sky. They spray chemicals over certain farmland. They can short that stock or that commodity because they know it's going to get wiped out. They know it's going to be a bad crop year. And so they're playing, they love playing God too. They get to make more money on it. What's another one? I mean, there's so many just different, you know, kind of floating things around here. Oh, and then there's the people who just think, oh, they're trying to poison everything, which is kind of hard. It's getting harder and harder to argue with that because, I mean, they poison our water with fluoride. They poison the food supply. The soil's getting wiped out. And at some point you got to think like, are they just trying to like completely kill us all? You know, are they just trying to, is this part of the depopulation agenda or the dumbing down of people? They're trying to, you know, remove our brain power, remove our ability to have, they already like, you know, got rid of our healthy food. It's getting harder and harder and more expensive to have any healthy food. And the water is ruined. And so they're just trying to finish the job. And whoever they is another, you know, tough question. Like how far up into the deep state does this go? You know, is it this group or that group that benefits from depopulating humanity and like dumbing us down to just be more obedient cattle? It's tough. You know, this part of why this one, it makes you feel crazy. First of all, because I mean, of course, it sounds crazy and you just start thinking like, how could this actually be happening? But also just the depth of the corruption on many different sides that play a piece into it. It is tough to put together and no one knows the exact answer because this is obviously extremely under wraps because they know that if word gets out that the chemtrails, that like the ultimate, this is the crown jewel conspiracy theory where of course everyone knows that is like the one conspiracy theory. All the other ones are correct. The conspiracy theorists are right about everything else, but chemtrails, of course that one's crazy. So they had to keep that one intact. If that one breaks, then it's, you know, all hell breaks loose because the whole world will just figure out that truly everything is a lie. And they don't want that to happen.
Yeah. Well, I talk a lot on the show about how, like, we need an awakening because there are still so many people who, I think, have, like, woke up to, you know, to COVID and to, like, a lot of the things that, a lot of things that have been going on for a long time. But there's still not, I don't think there's, like, enough anger. It's like, yeah, okay, they won't fool me again. But then they're asleep at the wheel on this topic. You know, I mean, even someone like myself who just hasn't done the research. Now, that said, I don't know what to do about it exactly. I will say, too, it's becoming harder and harder to combat these in your personal life. Like I just made a very significant investment in water purification in our home. So I brought in an expert, a filtration company. So we've got a carbon filter on the front. We soften the water just for the, you know, for the plumbing. But then I did the UV light filter. I've got reverse osmosis on our tap and our
ice maker.
That's
what I was waiting for. That reverse osmosis is the key right there.
Yeah. So like now we're drinking like very pure water, but like I send my, you know, like I've got three young kids, like I told you, I send them outside as often as I can, as minimal clothing as I can, as much sunlight as they can get. And it's like, that's good, but it depends on what is being rained down from the sky on them. You know, this is something that's almost inescapable. You can clean up your water. You can do your best on organic non-GMO foods, but, you know, this stuff is still going to seep into our food system, the air we breathe, all of that. What do you think if you were to just anticipate, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, what sorts of new diseases or prevalence of existing diseases do you think we're going to start seeing from this?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough. And that is exactly why this is such a dark one to go down because, you know, I am such a lover of nature and the outdoors. I'm just like you and, you know, your kids. I want to go outside and be outside all the time and hike and run in the woods and ride my bike everywhere. And when you learn about this, you realize that you don't even have your fresh air anymore. They've taken everything from us, you know, like you don't even get your escape from, you know, the fiat tech world to go out in the woods anymore without getting sprayed with poison. It's tough. It's a really tough pill to swallow for sure. And you talked about how COVID was an awakening for a lot of people. Well, one of the theories of what's going on in the UK right now, that mysterious fog everywhere, is that they're, you know, filling the fog with mRNA and, you know, they're basically vaccinating people through the fog. I don't know, you know, it's too early to tell. This is literally developing right now, but I mean, do you think Bill Gates would really not do that? if they had the technology. They've got patents on all this stuff. You know, he's literally dumped mosquitoes, like genetically modified mosquitoes in Baltimore before, just like on this like crowd of people to see what would happen for experiments and, you know, all the stuff he does all over the world. I wouldn't put it past him. And people are reporting all over the place. And for folks, I'm not sure if you're like me and you take forever to upload your episodes, but this is December 30th. So that's kind of where we are in the timeline. But tons of people in the UK are reporting, you know, sore throats, itchy eyes, coughing, like all these, you know, negative symptoms from this mysterious fog that's just outside their houses right now. So no one knows what it is. And I think there's going to be all kinds of health problems from this. And maybe the ones we're seeing right now already are because of this, and a big reason, because dementia going up, like I talked earlier about how the bugs are dying off at such a high rate. The bees and the butterflies are all getting wiped out because they have really sensitive little respiratory systems, and they're being filled with aluminum. And they're literally getting dementia. Like, these insects are getting dementia. They're finding that they're going crazy. Like, sometimes you'll see bugs just like walk around in circles and just like doing things that aren't natural. And I guess you can only really spot that if you've been watching bugs your whole life, like a weirdo like me. I'd love hanging out with the bugs. But yeah, they're going nuts. And it's because they're literally getting dementia. And who else is getting dementia? Humans?
Yeah.
Look at the rates of dementia going up like crazy. And, you know, there's different aspects of this. Like I said, it's a complex beast when we look at just health as a whole. And one of the other worlds I look at is the health world, or the diet world, like you do as well. And I think that a big reason why so many people's brains aren't working so well is because they're eating so many plants. And plants are filled with toxins, which nature has evolved to fill the plants with toxins because they don't move. They aren't able to run around and use teeth and claws to defend themselves in nature. So their only way to survive is to poison the things that try to eat them. And so, you know, even the vegans will know that you shouldn't walk through the forest and just eat leaves and branches off the trees. It's going to make you sick. But they see like a bag of spinach or a salad at the restaurant that is like 99% the same as those plants in the woods. And they think, oh, this must be good for me because it's, you know, in a bag or it's on a plate. But I still think it's bad. And yeah, it's still like genetically almost exactly the same as these plants we know are bad for us. And then, you know, we all have like vegan friends in our life who are just falling apart in some sense, hormonally or mentally, physically. You can see it after many years of them doing this. But they just don't put the pieces together because there's so much indoctrination there that, you know, meat is bad for you by these same evil forces that want us weak and obedient. So, there's no clear answer to, like, why are people getting sick everywhere? And this geoengineering rabbit hole was a big new piece for me, which I really only started digging in around, July this year. I think the diets are ruined. There's the fluoride in the water is really bad. And, you know, tons of other stuff in the water. Like, there's like literally birth control pills now in the water if you test it, because all the things that people throw into the drain end up in a water supply. So good for you for getting that filtration system. I definitely recommend people do that. And another thing that I've been adding to the mix since learning more about this is just getting on more detox. Because when I was on carnivore for a while, I did think for a while, they're like, oh, I don't need any supplements, I'm good. I got rid of all my supplements, because before that, when I was having like the mixed diet, I was having like mostly meat and fruit at that point. I was kind of on a Paul Saldino diet. I still took some supplements. I felt like I needed them. But after I went fully carnivore, I didn't need them anymore. I threw them all out. And then I started researching geoengineering and thought, like, man, like these chemicals like block uptake of certain things in your body. So right now I'm just taking Shilajit, which is kind of a well-known detoxer. It's a good chelator of heavy metals, so I'm taking that one. I do recommend people, if they want to really get, you know, the best results and learn the most, to test themselves first. I know you can get like blood tests to see. A lot of people are going to get their blood tested and seeing that those high levels of aluminum. I haven't done it myself. I probably should have, but it's been a busy holiday season. So I just went straight in. I'm just gonna start detoxing right away. But yeah, everyone should be detoxing, in my opinion.
Well, hey, that's actually a good transition, because I want to talk to you about your diet. So what foods do you eat, and when did this start? How did it come about? What made you rethink sort of the way you approached nutrition?
Yeah, so the diet, journey has been quite a fun one. That's been probably the biggest life change I've made in the last several years, is I definitely grew up on the classic mixed diet. I wouldn't say standard American diet, because that's becoming total garbage. And like, my family really tried to be healthy. You know, we had lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and nuts and seeds and salads all the time. And a little bit of lean meat, usually a little bit of chicken, was kind of like the meat, because we just felt that fat is bad. So you want low fat meat. And as I started, you know, going through this awakening process that a lot of us do, just following some different Instagram pages and listening to different people that are talking about different things, and just like feeling like challenging my views, because you can just feel, even when you're still a little normie, you can just feel that something's wrong, you know? And so it, for me, it just took, you know, following some new people online. And also when I was living in Austin, Texas, there was a great Bitcoin meetup there back in 2022. And I just started absorbing that Bitcoiner energy, you know, just see in Austin, like there's all the legends there. You got, you know, Marty Bent, Pierre Richard, Saif Edine, Jimmy Song, like tons of people that all the Bitcoiners will know. And you notice when you go to these meetups, there's catering there often. Like Texas Slim would show up sometimes, and they'd have like a KNC cattle and all of them with a bunch of delicious meat everywhere. And all these Bitcoiners just have giant plates of meat all around. And so that's kind of what got me to start looking into this. Like, maybe there's something here. These people are all super smart and dialed in about a lot of other things, you know? Maybe give it a shot. And so I would probably credit Saif Edine for being the guy that really pushed me eventually to go to all meat. Because for, what was it, maybe like a year or so, I did the meat, fruit, and honey thing. And definitely saw improvements there, for sure. But I just wanted to continue experimenting with new things. So I eventually went straight full carnivore of like no fruit, no honey, no carbs at all, only meat, salt, and water. And to me, I saw another jump up in health benefits from that. Like truly, the clarity of focus and motivation, and just for me, the mental side was the most mind-blowing. And that was the biggest shift I saw from going to like the animal-based, the carnivore, was like my brain power just went insane. It's like I just have so much energy every day when I wake up, and I sleep better, I focus better. Like I'm always just really mission driven. You know, I used to kind of be sort of lazy. I'd, you know, spend a lot of time scrolling on the phone doing these like NPC activities. It's like the temptation to do any of that stuff is just gone, and it just makes it really easy to lock in and just grind like so many of us Bitcoiners like to do. It makes it easy and more fun, and like truly I can just do it every day, and I love that, you know. And when I ever do experiment with, because I'm always an experimenter, you know, I will occasionally throw some carbs back and just see what happens. And sometimes just because, you know, I'm out with friends, I'm saying just fuck it, let me just, you know, have a beer with the guys or whatever. And when you've been strict carnivore for a while and you throw some carbs in, like I'll remember when I was in Mexico last time, this place I like to stay in, Cancun, always has this big, you know, plate of fresh fruit. So I threw in like a mango. You know, I used to eat mango like every day or every other day is for like a dessert. And I could feel the next day after I had that mango, my joints were a little bit achier and my motivation was slightly down. Like I was a little bit more tempted to just like lay on my ass and watch baseball, you know, just these that super hardcore like motivation and drive to succeed just like came down a notch. You know, it's still better than average, but I just feel when you're full carnivore, you're in true superhuman mode, and it makes everything just so much easier.
So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this. I went full carnivore. Saif Edine was kind of I think I'd heard about it from maybe like Jordan Peterson or one of those people, but it sounded like something for like an acute condition or whatever. And then I heard Saif Edine talking about it as like a way of life for just anyone, you know, like just a better way of eating. And so I went strict carnivore for, what would it have been, maybe a year, 18 months, something like that. And I started to experience what I kind of felt like were Paul Saladino's symptoms and I got real lethargic. Like I was fine for a long time. It was great. I completely overcame my addiction to sugar. Like I haven't had dessert in 2 years. But then I started reincorporating fruit and raw honey into my diet. I probably up increased my consumption of raw milk as well, and felt better after that. I don't think I've found optimally like the right sort of macronutrient, like if I'm eating fruit and honey, should I be eating like leaner ground beef for, sort of keeping track, making sure the calories I'm consuming make sense for my body and that. But it's something I continue to toy around with. Is there a reason you think that I would have experienced like low energy after 18 months of being generally fine on carnivore and needed to switch to reincorporating carbs?
Yeah, good question. And before I throw my answer at you, I want to remind everyone that I am just a pleb just researching all these things. I'm not a doctor of any kind. I'm just one of those people that just goes to research things like a maniac.
Not medical advice.
And the person I always recommend to people, especially Bitcoiners who are looking to, dig deeper down this rabbit hole, is a guy named Dr. Anthony Chaffee. Chaffee spelled Chaffee. His podcast is called The Plant Free MD. And that was a podcast that officially changed my mind and like got me down this path. And he answered all these questions like infinitely better than I can. He is arguably, in my opinion, one of the smartest, medical minds on the planet. He is a very strict carnivore advocate. So I would recommend going and listen to him. But anyway, to answer your question, I would ask, did you have organs as well?
I think early on I was doing a lot of organ meats. Mm-hmm. That probably started to slide later on. I don't think I was ever not doing organ meats, but early on I was doing liver, heart, bone marrow, making my own bone broth, kidney, maybe I hate kidney, but I can kind of make it work if I have to. So a bit of that. Liver and heart were the two that I did the most of.
Yeah, so that is the first thing that I usually bring up, because there are a lot of cases where people find that eating these organs actually messes up their vitamin levels, because they have such a ridiculously high amount of certain vitamins only. Like beef liver, for example, has like many hundreds of percent daily intake of vitamin A. So, this is in I would say, like, when I follow the Paul Saladino journey, he's like really the guy that made his animal based diet a thing. His story of, like you mentioned, where he says that carnivore started going wrong for him, I give him credit for being fully transparent, because you can really watch his whole journey, what he was doing. I believe, and many of the carnivore advocates believe, the reason why he was seeing those problems is because he was pounding so much freaking beef liver every single day, and it was screwing up those vitamin ratios. And we just, we were saying, like, if you just got rid of that and just went to like just, muscle meat and water, then those problems likely go away. And that's why I asked that. Like, were you ever like only just having like steak and salt and water?
Probably not for very long or okay. For consistent stretches of time. So yeah, something like that might have made a difference.
I would say that would probably be it, or at least a factor. And like you said, the macros, the fat and protein ratio, like everyone has a different ratio that really works for them. And this is why, like, I really recommend people experiment. And I mean, sometimes people do end up back at the animal-based thing. But what I would just say about that is I would ask you, why do you think that fixed it? And for the case of a lot of people that find that they feel better on that one, it's usually because before they were eating the organs. And because what carbohydrates do is they block nutrient uptake. So those fruits and the honey that you're eating, the fructose from that, it actually slows down your ability to, to turn those vitamins into amino acids in your body. So they find that when they put carbs in, it makes them feel better sometimes, because it's blocking that over uptake of the specific vitamins from the organs. You know what I mean? So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is, I can't repeat this enough. Like, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a professional. So, do your own experiments, do your own research. But that is, from the many thousands of stories I've listened to, a pretty common theme is that people just find out that sometimes organs are a bad thing. And that's what caused those problems. And if you just experiment strictly with different ratios of fat to protein in just the meat, they'll figure it out and they'll be fine. And I think that just when you look far enough back on a human timeline, like there was a period where we were eating like 90%+ meat, and all the sugar and the berry trees were only around for 2-3 weeks a year at the end of summer before winter. And so this was evolutionarily just like a way for us to fatten up for the winter for just a couple of weeks. It was never around all the time. So I don't think humans ever need these things. And if you think that you need them, it's because there's a different problem going on. And, but like, and I would say this too, this is one of the most mind-blowing things that I learned from going down this rabbit hole, is that every single carbohydrate just breaks down into sugar. Like every plant breaks down to the same sugar. So whether you're eating a Snickers bar or a stick of celery or a mango, your body just sees sugar molecules for all those things. Of course, a candy will have other chemicals in it, but you know, for all these different plants that you're having, your body just sees glucose and fructose. So like you might as well just be having a spoonful of sugar every morning. It's more efficient than having fruit or honey. You know, it's the same exact thing to your body. So I would say, like, if eating sugar, like using that mindset, like taking down shots of sugar, if that's fixing something, there's probably something else wrong. You know what I mean? Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So today's the 30th of December. So in 2 days, I'm doing at least a month. I'm going back to strict carnivore.
Yes.
But the plan is just like, you know, 80-20 ground beef, ribeyes.
Perfect.
What do you think about eggs and raw honey? Or, I'm sorry, raw milk?
So both of those are totally okay. It depends on if you, like, I would recommend trying the lion diet out, because it sounds like you're basically going to be there already.
Meat, salt, water.
Yep. So the lion diet, for people that don't know, is kind of the peak carnivore, where it's literally no dairy at all. It's just like fatty beef. Well, it can be any meat technically, but you're going to want to have fatty beef for it.
Yeah.
So steak, salt, and water only. You don't even put butter on it. And for me, if you have a grill, like, I love the taste of having like grilled steak. So for me, I've done stretches of lion diet and like I felt absolutely amazing. Probably the best I've ever felt when I did strict lion diet. I just grill it, salt it, and just eat that, just a big pile of steak every day, and that's it. But yeah, I mean, if you're just staying with the more, you know, traditional carnivore with like butter and dairy and all that and eggs, that's all totally cool. But it's worth trying the lion diet at some point to see if that fixes, you know, Everything. Maybe I'll do that. Yeah, I would recommend it, because there's certain people out there who have to do that. Like Jordan Peterson and Michaela Peterson are an example where, you know, Michaela Peterson's story is really insane. Even if she has, you know, eggs or dairy or, you know, any plant whatsoever, she just has really bad symptoms. She flares up badly. So she literally only has strip loin steak, nothing else, every single day. That's it. And she found that for her, that was, you know, all that she could do. And some people are just really sensitive to these things. And dairy, like milk, has a little bit of sugar in it. It has galactose. It's not sweet, but it does have sugar in it. So for some people, that can cause issues. So it's all experimenting. But for you, I would try a lion diet out, because I know that you're serious about this, and I'd be curious. I think that would fix your issues. I'd love to hear more about that.
I'm going to try that for 30 days, and if it's going well, I'll stick with it.
Yeah, keep us updated.
Yeah, definitely. So, last question on diet, and if you don't want to get overtly political, no problem. But how are you feeling? Hopeful, skeptical, indifferent about like the MAHA movement, RFK, what you think he could or couldn't do? I just listened to, I don't know if you know Jack, Dr. Jack Cruz.
Oh, I already know you're about. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
He had this this debate with Callie Means, and they were talking. I just finished it last night, and it's eye opening. And if you go listen to Callie Means, go listen to Jack Cruz, and then go listen to them debate. And it's really interesting. And Jack is very skeptical now of RFK.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if you have thoughts one way or another as to what's going to be.
I wish I would have watched it now. I have it on my bookmark because I was going to watch it today. But yeah.
It's 3 hours, dude.
Yeah.
it's a long time.
I love my big boy podcast, man. I just go out walking and just like walk until the podcast is over and come home. It's my favorite activity. But yeah, I've heard a lot about that. There's been a lot of buzz about it. I really want to listen, because I'm always open to hearing these different viewpoints, and Dr. Cruz is a, you know, very sharp guy on a lot of things, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't speak from knowledge on that specific debate that they had, but I see the general point. They're saying like there should be more focus on, you know, the pharmaceutical side, and is this huge focus on specifically the food, is that a distraction? I would say, I mean, RFK has been super skeptical of all the pharmaceutical stuff too. So like, I'm not sure, you know, where it's come from now, if he thinks that he's going to like change his ways when he gets in office. I'm not sure. What did Dr. Cruz say that he thinks is?
I think his concern is about how silent people have been on the jab. And I think it was a little hard to, I walked away with a still relatively favorable opinion of Kelly. Even though I like Jack and respect him, I don't get the sense that Cali's like a deep state plant or something like that personally. But I guess their frustration with Cali, because there's another gal, another doctor on the podcast, was something to the effect of he's not coming out and saying we need to take the jab off the market.
They just think that is the number one priority.
Like that, yeah. He's distracting us with seed oils and, you know, these other things, when the number one health crisis is the jab. And I think that's maybe the sort of the core of the debate. And because he won't say we should take it off the market, there's suspicion, which, you know, I understand. I respect that point of view. But I guess the question, and now I think that a lot of RFK and a lot of the guys aren't talking about jabs so much. It's seed oils and not fluoride and water, all good topics, but it's a distraction potentially from what some people believe is the bigger public health crisis of our time.
Yeah. And I mean, this is where, to me, it really just comes down to like, there are so many problems to fix. What do we fix first? Because if Danny Jones would let me come in onto his podcast and debate these people going in, I would say, why the fuck are we talking about geoengineering, spraying metal in the sky? That should be number one. I think that's more important than seed oils and vaccines, personally, you know? So like, there are so many things to fix here. And like, what is the first thing to fix? I feel like it's kind of a fight about that. Because I mean, when I've heard so many stories of people just massively improving their life from making these dietary changes. So it's hard for me to say like, we shouldn't make that a focus, you know, because it could help so many people. And it is, you know, it's something people do every single day. They're shoveling the wrong food down their mouth. They're eating all these food dyes, chemicals, seed oils that are, you know, making them stupid, you know, is literally poisoning their brain. So to me, I just think that, and it's also something that's completely changeable. You know, it's really easy for people to change this on an individual level. And when you're talking about the pharmaceutical industry, it's a much bigger, more complex beast. It's going to take a lot more policy changes and, you know, gears turning to fix that. I agree with you. It should certainly be addressed, but I would say like, perhaps they're, you know, taking the easiest low hanging fruit first, and perhaps they will move up the train later. And like I said, I think that geoengineering should be the absolute first thing they look at. And RFK, by the way, has mentioned this. He is the only major politician who's ever even acknowledged chemtrails. He on Twitter responded just a few months ago to this whistleblower video of a pilot explaining how, you know, the chemtrail pilots are paid just as much as Air Force One to stay quiet and spray. And RFK responded to it and he said, we will stop this crime. That's what he said. So that's still the only time it's come out. So I'm in this sort of same boat of just kind of rabbling, like, why, talk about it more, make this like number one. But it's hard for us to really imagine how deep the corruption is and how big of a monster that we have to turn around, which is why, you know, like you probably, I'm assuming, I keep Bitcoin as my main focus, because this is going to fix all these things organically. You know, all those problems will be fixed when there's no longer a money printer at the top that can just funnel money into all of these ridiculous, insane industries that are overbloated and make profit from poisoning people. That's what we need to fix. So that's kind of my thoughts on the situation. Does that answer your question?
No, it does. So let's talk about Bitcoin then. So how did you find Bitcoin? I'm gonna go on a limb here and guess that Bitcoin preceded a lot of the things, your views on much of what we've discussed so far. It was the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Would that be a fair suspicion to have?
Absolutely. Bitcoin is the ultimate rabbit hole introduction for so many people. I'm definitely one of them. I went through the shitcoining phase for longer than I like to admit, from like 2017 to 2020-ish. In 2020, you know, during the lockdowns, I was in New Zealand, and in this beautiful little town called Petone, just like 30 minutes away from Wellington, and I lived in this little tiny house Airbnb, and I would always just watch YouTube videos with dinner on TV, and of course, for dinner, I was eating like pasta and salad and fruit bowls and all that stuff. But credit to the YouTube algorithm, us Nostra friends hate the algorithm, but the YouTube finally threw me a bone here, and it got me to watch Mike Maloney's Hidden Secrets of Money series on YouTube, which to me was what finally blew my mind and made me realize, like, we really need to focus on fixing the money. It's fiat money that's the problem. And so up till that point, I had like a crypto blog and was talking about all these altcoins I thought were gonna, you know, change everything. And I realized after that, you know, Bitcoin is really the way. I need to focus on Bitcoin. And as you go down that Bitcoin rabbit hole, like reading the Bitcoin Standard, finding all these Bitcoin podcasts, which it's so great to see so many more coming out, like yours and mine are, you know, relatively new to this space. I say the more the better, baby. Let's go. Everyone start a podcast. I love this decentralization of education and learning and getting people into Bitcoin because, like I said, this was what started it all for me. As soon as you go through the Bitcoin rabbit hole, you start meeting, you know, these really high level people who are trying to improve themselves and get better. And that's what brought me into the carnivore rabbit hole and eventually the geoengineering rabbit hole and all sorts of other rabbit holes. There's a million other ones I have just on the back burner that I'm just like, you know, my brain is just so full of information I'm learning about right now. It's hard to, you know, go through everything. And that's a good problem to have. Like, there's so much to learn about out there. And I wouldn't even be in this mindset of being excited to learn about all these different things if it hadn't been for Bitcoin really just breaking the door open of realizing everything in the world is a lie, you know? And it's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people that, you know, the fiat world has completely inverted everything and something has to break the door down. And you know, I spent a lot of time in that carnivore community trying to pass them over to Bitcoin and bridge that gap over to Bitcoin, because I think Bitcoin is the ultimate like core rabbit hole that shows you how when the money is, you know, infinitely printable, everything else gets poisoned. And I'm trying to be that bridge from the carnivores. Like, you guys need to learn about Bitcoin because this is like such a, like the health world and the monetary world are so closely connected. I think there's more Bitcoiners learning about carnivore than there are carnivores learning about Bitcoin. But mm-hmm. I think once we bridge the gap between those really powerful groups and communities who are like care about fixing the world at a really, you know, foundational level, because the food and the money are like two, and not to mention Nostr, that's a whole nother one, you know, fixing the communication, the food and the money. When once those three things are fixed, I'm extremely optimistic for what happens, you know, once those three start really taking off. And I would say that I think that carnivore were even earlier in the adoption curve, because I mean, if you talk to 100 people on the street, you know, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin? What are your thoughts on a carnivore diet? I think you'd probably hear more people say that they'd be interested in Bitcoin than carnivore, because people think that meat is just bad for you everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, Bitcoin was what started it all. And I just, you know, decided to start this podcast to explore all these different rabbit holes that are out there. And it's just been tons of fun, man. I absolutely love it. And I appreciate the Bitcoiners for always pushing me and challenging me to learn more.
Yeah, I think you're right about your comment about, you know, more people would be interested in Bitcoin, because there's like an appeal to number go up, and it seems unappealing on its face to restrict yourself.
Yeah.
You know, only one type of food. And like,
and not only that, but a food that everyone thinks is bad for you. You know,
yeah,
people
yeah,
are so
yeah,
brainwashed
true.
About it. Yeah.
But the funny thing is, like my wife is like, she will not go carnivore. She won't even try it. But she's not concerned about me being unhealthy. She sees what I'm doing, and I stay healthy, and I'm not don't appear to be dying, you know, a slow death here, doing what I'm doing. But I think for her, and I think for many people, we've been so accustomed and to some degree spoiled by diverse food options and, you know, many things that just taste good and that have been touted for a long time as healthy. That the idea of saying I'm not going to eat any of those things feels like self-restriction. And I guess it is self-restriction, but I think what's hard to get through to people is if you had been born 1,000 years ago, you would never have been eating 98% of what you're eating today. Like you would basically probably be eating meat. And if you came across some honey or some berries in season in the place you happened to be for a couple of weeks, yes, you probably, I think people were probably eating, you know, fruit, only during stretches where it was available because it wasn't commercially produced and shipped around the world so you could have it all year round. But that's, it's such a hard, like, mental escape that I think people have to make. So one question I will ask you on Bitcoin. So I had a guy, on the podcast on, I just recorded last week, so it'll be out probably a week before yours is. And he, I'm not going to go into detail on his thesis for this, but he thinks that the fix the money, fix the world thing is somewhat off. Because he envisions a world where, and he's a hardcore Bitcoiner, he envisions a true Bitcoin standard, which I think he believes is means a lot of self-sovereignty, people in self-custody, they, individuals, families are in control of their wealth. And he sees an opportunity, not a good opportunity, but an opportunity for like a government Bitcoin standard. And so he's very skeptical of like the strategic reserves that people are talking about. He's like, I don't want those people to have power. And we could enter a place where we've quote unquote fixed the money. We're on a Bitcoin standard supposedly, but there are still violent empires, you know, operating. And, you know, they have so much Bitcoin that they can continue to do what they do to some degree. I'm not really sure what I think about it yet, because I think you still don't have a money printer. And so maybe you can carry on for a while, but I don't know. Do you have any initial reaction to that? I know I'm kind of thrusting this on you.
No, I would absolutely agree with that last part you said, where, you know, are there going to be bad people that stack a bunch of Bitcoin in time and, you know, make profit from it? Yes. And bad entities, like we know BlackRock has a bunch. I'm no BlackRock fan, but I'm still super optimistic because, like, these people, it's a choice between one or the other, like the fiat money printer versus Bitcoin. And one of them has an end. It has a finish line where you can no longer print free money anymore. It's scarce. It has a limit. I think just the fact that there's a limit there is what matters here, because I'm thinking very long term. You know, I'm thinking, you know, several generations down the road, you know, if fiat money is still, I mean, fiat keeps failing over and over, to keep trying it, I guess, but the fact that there is a limit to Bitcoin, I don't care if, you know, the bad people get a bunch of Bitcoin. Of course, I'm going to try really hard to get more of the people who I would love to be rich, you know, the people in the 99%. But this is part of reality, is that like some of these rich bad guys are going to get some and they're going to make some profit off of it. But I think just the fact that they don't have a money printer anymore is going to, first of all, just make them act differently in general. They may stop these things, all these bad things they're doing, even, you know, when they have a lot of Bitcoin, because they know that, oh, I can't print more of this after it's gone. It's actually gone, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that will, and if it doesn't change their ways and they just continue spending like they are now, then they'll just run out of Bitcoin.
They'll
actually get cleared out as, you know, bad, bloated, inefficient businesses are supposed to. So I just really think it's going to organically solve itself. And I'm not stressed at all about, you know, these big entities or governments buying Bitcoin. I, you know, the question of, you know, I'm an American, you're an American, like, do I want my country to buy some Bitcoin? I don't care. I don't care, because, you know, we've had so much power for so long being a global reserve currency. One part of me says, like, you know what, like, I kind of hope these smaller countries like El Salvador in Central America and South America that we've been screwed over for so long get it before us, because they deserve it. You know, we've been fucking them over with all these different, you know, just throwing debt at them and, you know, all these things that Alex Gladstein talks about in his work. You know, part of me thinks, you know, they kind of deserve this, and we've had too much power for so long. But some people would say, like, oh, that's like anti-American, anti-patriotic, whatever. Like, and then on the other hand, if we buy a bunch, selfishly, that'd be cool, because I love my country and I think it'd be cool if, you know, we hit both of those check boxes where we do get Bitcoin. And so we have, you know, this reserve, like you said, but they're also forced into being more responsible because of the scarcity. And would it be possible that politicians could magically, you know, get smarter and stop doing all this crazy stuff that's bad for everyone? I don't know. But this is why I just don't care, because like I am definitely in the Bitcoiner mindset of, you know, I'm a sovereign individual. I'm going to focus on myself and my loved ones and doing what's good for us. And, you know, these politicians can do whatever they want. I just don't care about them anymore. They're not, you know, part of my life. I don't want to be connected to them in that way where I care about what they're doing. I think that if you are, then you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah, I go back and forth. And what I get worried about is that people who listen to the channel hear me and they think that I'm wishy-washy, or I'm trying to like adapt to the guest, or I just can't make up my mind or something. I think the point I've reached is that I would prefer that no government has a strategic reserve. If a government has a strategic reserve, I guess I wish it would be the United States for the benefit of me as an American.
Yeah.
I don't want them to have more power. Like that's why I don't really want them to have a strategic reserve, but for the potential prosperity of our nation and for that Bitcoin to then eventually be distributed amongst Americans, I see potential value as a citizen of the United States for that. And I, you know, that could be, that's not something I've thought on much. So maybe there are other implications, and someone like Saifedean would poke all sorts of holes and you're not going to be more prosperous just because your country has more Bitcoin or something. And I'm certainly open to that. But I think I understood this gentleman's point who I was interviewing, that what we might end up with, if we're not careful, I think is sort of his point, is number go up money instead of freedom money. Okay. And I think I can kind of keep that in my head while still appreciating the fact that no money printer and a foundation built on an auditable ledger, like that's a huge monumental step forward in terms of the monetary position of the world. And so I think fix the money, fix the world is probably an oversimplification, but I think it does tremendous good almost regardless. Just wipe out the central bankers. Like that's,
yeah, it's going to improve things. You know, it's so funny to me when people like point at Bitcoins and like, oh, you're just utopian. You think everything will be perfect with Bitcoin because you love Bitcoin so much. And like, you know,
people will still improve things.
It's going to make things better. You know, like, should we not focus on something that we know will improve some really core root problems here? You know? And I think that it's valid and understandable to be a little wishy-washy on these really tricky, nuanced topics, you know, like you talked about. I go a little bit back and forth on it, too, because it really comes down to we don't know exactly what's going to happen when the debt bomb officially goes off and we start seeing these cascading hyperinflations and just chaos unfolding, you know. And this is why I like every other Bitcoiner, love listening to Jeff Booth, because he talks about this. He kind of grounds me with that calm, soothing voice of his, like, what is this shit show going to look like? And he kind of makes me feel like it is possible for it to actually be smooth. Like, I feel like a lot of the time, I don't think it's possible for it to be smooth. But, you know, just having folks like him saying, like, it is possible if we do things correctly, there could be a smooth path to the Bitcoin standard. I still don't know, you know, if that's a little bit of a copium or not, because it's going to be really difficult to switch from the fiat funny money to a hard standard without them going down without a massive temper tantrum on the way out the door, you know? So it's just a tough one. I don't think that you should feel like being wishy-washy on this is a bad thing, because it's a tough one. This is, you know, it's a very complicated question, and we need to be having these different ideas coming together. And as a podcaster, I completely understand, like, whenever I'm recording with someone, I want to like have my ideas kind of figured out, because I'm afraid, I'll look at this in a year or two and I was totally wrong and that's bad. Like, but sometimes, you know, we're just here to learn too, you know, we're all learning in real time. This is why this is great and an awesome medium to do this, because we can put our ideas together and sometimes we'll be wrong about stuff later. We can look back and say, oh, I was wrong about this, but you know, things went a different way than I thought they would. But you know, that's part of the process. We're all improving, learning, and sharpening our ideas.
Yeah. The good thing for me at this point is I think if strategic reserve turns out to be a good thing, I could probably find clips of myself, you know, touting the strategic reserve.
And you're playing both sides, so you always win.
I'm like Jim Cramer, you know, like just you know, he loves Bitcoin. He hates Bitcoin. That's kind of my tactic here, I guess. Okay, man, let's round this out here. I got one more question for you. And this is what I ask everyone at the end of each episode. What is an unpopular opinion that you hold? You get bonus points if it offends some Bitcoiners.
Well, so the first one would probably be geoengineering. Most people still think that's crazy, even in Bitcoin. So hopefully that'll change. I think in the next year, that's going to change, where people are going to look into it and, you know, figure out that there's a lot of reality there. But I have a totally out of left field one for you. And again, I want to make sure people know the timeline here just so they can, you know, look at the charts for this to see if I'm right or wrong. But I believe GameStop, that freaking fiat stock, like, why would I care about a stock in a fiat market? What the fuck? No, I think that thing never actually squeezed in 2021. You know, I bought a bunch of stock back then. I still believe that we're going to see a huge short squeeze in GameStop. And I've even written blog posts about this on my website. And my very first podcast episode talks about this, where I believe that was a huge can kick. And the Bitcoiners always say, like, oh, you're insane for still holding on to this stock. Why don't you sell it all for Bitcoin? I think that the math is too insane for them to keep it under wraps forever, and it's going to explode at some point. So that is definitely one that, you know, when I post about on Noster, people are like, what are you talking about? Why are you holding a stock? You know, you understand Bitcoin. Why are you holding this thing? And I just think that this is going to be the ultimate finale to my stock market career, which I used to be a stock guy before, and this is the one last thing I'm holding on to. So my entire net worth right now is basically Bitcoin and GameStop. And I'm still holding on that one, because I think it's going to happen. December 30th right now, people in the future looking at this look back, you'll see if I was right the next few months if things happen. So we'll find out.
Like, I'm trying to imagine what a non-Bitcoiner would hear when you say my entire net worth is Bitcoin and GameStop. Like, me trying to explain that to just one of my buddies who hasn't gone down the rabbit hole would just be a wild adventure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Awesome. And
I just think it's going to be my end game will always be Bitcoin. I want to make sure that's clear. Like, Bitcoin is the end game. That is the freedom money. So, but my thesis right now is GameStop's around $30 right now. If this thing rockets, then I'm, you know, going to put into Bitcoin and have a bigger stack than Michael Saylor, baby. Let's go.
Love it, man. Awesome. Hey, why don't you give a handoff? Where can people find you, reach out to you, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I've got Noster is the first one I give out to people now. I'm a huge Noster bull. Find me Ben Werman. I have, wherever you're listening to this, if it's on your podcast platforms, I have a podcast, just my name, Ben Werman Podcast, on YouTube, on Twitter, website. I even made a couple of websites about these things we've talked about today. So if you want to learn more about the carnivore diet, go to whycarnivore.com. If you want to learn more about Bitcoin, go to whybitcoinonly.com. Those are both my little projects where I just curated a ton of resources on these things that sort of walks people through the entire rabbit hole. So those are the places I would send people, and look forward to making some new friends after this if they come find me.
Perfect. Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, man. Thank you for making time today.
Yes, sir. It was awesome chatting, dude. Glad we could finally meet. I look forward to more someday.
Can't wait. Have a good one. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Ben. Again, really cool guy. Love everything that he's doing, all his thoughts on these very controversial and interesting topics. Make sure you check out his YouTube channel. If you enjoyed this conversation, do me a favor, subscribe to ours, like it, leave a comment, share it with someone who might be interested. We'd really appreciate that. And of course, you can follow The Bitcoin Way on X. We're at @TheBitcoinWay_. Can follow me there as well. Shoot me a message if you have any comments or feedback on the show. I'm @TheOtherMJordan. And of course, if you need help with proper 100% Bitcoin self-custody, online privacy, privacy phones, Plan B residencies, everything you need to be self-sovereign, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love to schedule some time with you to chat and explain how we can help. And of course, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.